We're joined on the programme now by a name that's been synonymous with the Defective Blocks campaign. He's stepped away somewhat from that now, but is an effective homeowner. And I suppose, Michael, really, this is the type of crisis you never truly step away from because it's ever present.
Yeah. Morning, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Good. I think probably... You definitely don't get away from it when you're in the middle of rebuilding your own home. And I think, I suppose, as a campaigner and probably one of the lead campaigners, you talk hypothetically. You talk about information that you've gleaned from other affected homeowners. And if anything, it's enhanced when you go through the process yourself. And I suppose all of the shortfalls that we highlighted, Greg, the whole way through over the years... come home to roost whenever you're in the middle of it yourself. And while it wasn't a case of thinking people were overstating it during the campaign when you weren't actually in it yourself in terms of a rebuild, it definitely comes home to roost as to how real it is for everybody. And I would count my own coping skills pretty good. Blessed with a good, solid family around me. I was lucky enough to have enough money to get the rebuild up and running, which I know is not the case for a lot of people out there. So I don't feel sorry for myself, but I definitely feel angry that I'm in this position and money that I suppose we're setting aside for retirement is now all being swallowed up and more in a rebuild again that you should never have had to do.
Yeah. Before we talk about the remediation and the percentages, 2,870 applications in 5 years. That is the tip of the iceberg. And, of course, it doesn't include social housing and other buildings. Of course, they would come in through a different way. Why is the figure, do you think, still under 3,000 5 years on?
It's just the inaccessibility of the scheme. And the, you know, the realisation that I came to loud and clear, and I'm absolutely adamant about this, is that delay was by design. There's none of this here accidental in hindsight, Greg, and that's genuinely my view on it. It was designed in a way that while we had the biggest redress scheme in the land announced on one hand, the carefully created constraints ensured that there was never going to be a tsunami of applications. And that was done quite deliberately. So what they have done is they've really given enough oxygen for people like myself that had enough money, although it was money that was set aside, like I say, for retirement, whatever the case may be, to go get the process going. They knew that there was going to be so many left behind that they were never going to get an avalanche of applications. And, you know, who's to say maybe when they have bled that dry and there's none of us left out there that has that bit of money to get the fund up and running, they will then go and look at it. But it seems to be it's going to be just, they're going to drag it out as long as they can. And as long as there's some applications coming through at a high level, you can see the process is working. But on the ground, we know it's not.
It would be interesting to see if there were some sort of, you know, government-managed end-to-end scheme, the likes that Sinn Féin have promised, and it's like everything, of course, you'd have to see what the situation was when any party were in power. But do you think there's a large cohort who don't have any available funding, don't have access to borrowings, that simply say, well, I can't even apply to this? Until such, I mean, there are people that probably can't even get the 500, 600, 700 quid together for the, you know, the visual assessment to even get the ball rolling. That's a fact. Like, so do you think if you would see an avalanche of applications onto this scheme, if it were more accessible?
There's no doubt in my mind about that whatsoever. And you brought up the Sinn Féin part there, Greg. And it was never political for me. At any point, it was never political. It was about given what was in power, every possible chance to go do the right thing with the guidance that we give them from the lived experiences of people. And when it became crystal clear that there was no appetite on their part whatsoever to go do that, we had to look then as to where the next biggest alternative was, and the biggest opposition party was Sinn Féin, and that was why, and the only reason why we got involved with them on this, and we created the People's Document, you'll remember that, with the four principles on there, the four Ps, the property, all affected properties, because no one was guilty in this. The people, no one left behind for the same reasons. Nobody was guilty in this. The process was end-to-end, and the end-to-end reason was that you wouldn't have local contractors bogging the ironman, which does happen here. does happen here, right down to tradesmen. That end-to-end scheme taken on by the state would ensure that there was buying power, that that would, wouldn't happen. It would happen at too big a scale. And then the prevention part, proper regulation or proper enforcement of regulation based on science, that would never happen again. If you think about them four P's, Greg, all them problems go away. But if you think of them four P's, that allows everybody to apply, and the state wasn't prepared to honour that. That's the bottom line.
What are the chances, though, of, you know, this scheme being constantly sort of updated and enhanced? Because, you know, the powers that be might sort of say, well, the key players are, have stepped away. Do you know the likes of yourself and Paddy and others that were very instrumental? And I know both of you and the rest of you still advocate, don't get me wrong. And then you see MAG sort of standing down. You know, the government might lean back and say, well, look, obviously we're doing something right because, you know, the campaign as such has been handed over to elected councillors and a TD and not necessarily, you know, a people's movement any longer. Government ministers locally, government reps will say, well, the scheme's working, it can be constantly enhanced and blah, 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 blah. I'm not saying that's not true, but that's... So everyone has a position here, right? So where do enhancements or changes come from this? Could Sinn Féin even sort of water down their promises if there's no sort of grassroots, high-profile campaign on this? I just wonder where we go to into the future now.
That's a concern. That's an absolutely legitimate concern. Now, that said, we have an elected TD, and I'm sure Charles Ward, although there's very little correspondence with him, but I'm sure he's doing his bit down there. The four councillors that we have within the power that they've got available to them will be doing what they can here. But you're right. The people movement, I think, was what made it different. And it was, and I'll go back again to the same thing, Paddy Dever brought about the people movement, and that is missing now. And I think what happens is you've got people now getting on with stuff, and you can see there's people moving forward. But that's the people that's in that bracket, like myself, that had some funds to get up and running. My worry is for the people that are not in that bracket and can't get off the ground. And, like, you know, the other part too, Greg, which was really soul-destroying, we, you know, we talked about the four Ps, and that's utopia. That's really what we're entitled to. But the compromise position that we asked for was very doable for them, and they wouldn't even take that on. And the first, we had two asks in that. One of them was the penalty-free downsizing. In other words, if you're going to give somebody a grant of 400,000 anyway, based on the size of their house, but they were 100,000 short, give them the 400,000. Allow the proper checks and balances to make sure the money went into that house, but let them go build whatever size of house they could for that 400,000. And they're not depending on a bank. So that allowed everybody into the scheme, not just the people who's in the bracket that I talked about that includes me. That was the first thing. The second one was transfer of eligibility. So if a pensioner wanted to sell their house and go and live in a wee house at the end of the village or whatever the case may be and see out their last days, sell the house, but the grant went with the house. That meant the house was worth something as opposed to nothing. Now, it shouldn't matter to the state if they're paying that money out to that address and it's the pensioner that owns it or the person that buys it, but they weren't prepared to do it. But, and it became very clear to me then why.
But the truth is...
It's back into the same story, Greg.
Yeah,
point,
I know exactly what you're
so
going to say.
In this one. Yeah. The reason that they didn't want to do it was that would cause the avalanche to happen. Everybody could then apply. It was then open and possible to everybody, and they weren't prepared to let that happen. And that was why they wouldn't let us do penalty-free downsizing or transfer of eligibility. And it's shame on them for that.
And there are some indications to that attitude in some of the reporting from the Ditch as well that sort of would sort of back that up, that the efforts were made to limit people accessing the scheme. Also to, you know, almost one in ten, you could sort of try and spin that 7%. But how many of those are, you know, full rebuilds, and how many of those are outer leaves? How much of that 7% is going to be back on this scheme again into the future?
That's the other concern, because I don't have the latest numbers to hand, but I know percentage-wise and ratio-wise, it was like two-third outer leaf to one-third rebuild. And the science is now superseding everything that NSAI, the National Standards Authority of Ireland, have available to them. Was available to them, they just haven't acknowledged it. And, you know, it's very possible that we have got the majority of that 7% that's going to be in a position where they have to come back round, avail of this 40-year state-back guarantee, and go through this nightmare twice in their lifetime, and that is just morally wrong.
Yeah, and we're probably going to see with the council how the scheme might best work in the private sector if that ever gets off the ground in terms of, you know, controlling costs with contractors and, you know, multiple builds at the same time. I don't know the ins and outs of that, but there is this issue as well. People that I speak to, they don't know what their shortfall is going to be yet. You know, they're like, well, we don't know what we're going to have to come up with. Some people have access to funds, others don't. And also the delays in receiving stage payments as well. We were speaking to a gentleman who in a week or so, his house, his rebuild should be beginning. But the contractor says, look, I'm working on another couple of houses. It's taken forever to get the money off the local authority or through the local authority off the housing department. I can't take on another defective concrete block property because I can't bridge these gaps. Again, we're told that that's being worked on. But these are more issues that affect particularly those less resourced.
And I think that there are certainly things that could help a bad situation and make it a lot better. There definitely are. One of the things that is that, you know, this idea of a maximum six stage payments, that's why then you'll have a contractor holding out then for, you know, as big a sum as possible to make a submission. While he's holding out, what he's doing is he's working off credit to make that happen. So, for example, if it was 12 stage payments that you could get on with smaller stage payments, it allows that cash flow to flow more freely. Things like that should cost the council nothing to do other than the fact they've got maybe twice the amount of processing. But that's purely an admin task. And that's, you know, if that's the biggest problem they've got, then they're not doing too bad. I think simple things like that are still being left on the table when they could be actioned. That's where I would hope we've got our four 100% redress party councillors and the other party councillors, where common sense would dictate this can be made easier by things that cost us nothing to do other than a bit of extra admin.
Yeah. The only thing I've observed over as long as I've been sitting in this chair is it almost feels like 99% of issues are resolved or there's movement on it when the people themselves, outside of the system. You know, to be honest, we know harm to Charles Ward, but he can ask a question every other day about this and see cancers and he'll be given a stock answer and nothing moves forward. But and that's no shade on him. It is just the way the system works. It's just the way the system works. So you can be seen as advocating, but it doesn't fundamentally do anything.
And that's my worry in it, Greg. My worry in it is that, but that people, the fatigue of a campaign, you know, if you look at the heights that campaign got to, Greg, it was just never going to be sustainable to that level forever. And see if we had the people in this county that was at cabinet level pushing as hard as the people were pushing, I don't think we'd be in this problem today. But that didn't happen. That didn't happen, unfortunately. And I think someone described it before as, you know, the government approach is to, you know, let the air slowly but surely leak out of the balloon and eventually it'll come back to earth. And I think that's what they successfully did. They just wore us out.
Yeah, I think many might agree with you. All right, Michael, on a positive note, though, thankfully you did have some reserves that you were able to, that were for something else, but you were able to lean on. And you can still somewhat see the light at the end of your tunnel, which is good for you and your family, because you've given up an awful lot of yourself in the campaign, not just in dealing with this on a personal level as well. So I don't think anyone would begrudge you a move into your house, hopefully before Christmas.
Yeah, exactly, Greg. And, you know, that's what I would say to people as well. For the people that's in that branch where they can go make things happen and get the funding for it, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is good. You know, the reality is we will have a better home than what we started out with from a fabric perspective. You know, you've got your underfloor heating, if you avail of the SEA grants, and there are people out there, Claire Irwin and others, that'll help on all that front and give all the guidance that's needed. And, you know, you get to the stage now where you start to certainly look forward to getting back into your home, but tinged with a bit of guilt, if I'm being honest.
Survivor's guilt, is it?
Can't get there.
Almost like survivor's guilt. Is it almost like survivor's guilt, if you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think so. I think so, Greg, yeah. And it's very, very real. And there's a lot of people out there that I'll still get phone calls every week. And I suppose every bit just gives you that sort of sense of, you know, lucky in one way. That's why I say I don't feel sorry for myself, but I feel angry.
Yeah, but you are going to have to, and you will, you are going to have to find the space to allow yourself especially with everything you've contributed to enjoy your house with your family, and that's what everyone would want for everyone. Michael, thank you so very much indeed. I do appreciate your time. Michael Doherty there, who's an affected homeowner, but also one of the key faces of that campaign for a long time. Just breaking down those figures a little bit. So there have been 2,796 applications to the scheme 5 years on. 1,334 had met the damage threshold required to qualify for the grant, which is lower than I was expecting. 54 applications were refused or withdrawn, while 27 did not meet the damage threshold. Since applications to the enhanced scheme opened, there have been 164 applications in Clare, 64 in Mayo, 3 in Donegal, and of course, 3 in Sligo and the rest in Donegal. So.